You're listening to Niagara Voices and Views, a program focused on contemporary issues and ideas that are defining St. Catharines and the broader Niagara community. We're inviting you not only to listen to Niagara Voices and Views, but also to get involved and help expand and enrich the conversation about issues in this region. On Niagara Voices and Views, we'll explore issues related to poverty reduction, highlight conversations about the creative city and gentrification, talk about livable wages, education, employment and equity, and how all of these issues, and much more, mix together in the place that we live. We're looking for researchers, writers, reporters, producers, and hosts to work with CFBU in an environment that will provide experiential learning and skills development. CFBU is excited to help you find your voice about the issues that matter to you and your community. We're always looking for input and opinions. Check out Niagara Voices and Views on Facebook or email us at talk@cfbu.ca. We look forward to hearing from you.
If you've been listening to the episodes of Niagara Voices and Views over the past few weeks, you know that in terms of a number of the issues that we've been talking about that pertain to Niagara, St. Catharines, Niagara-on-the-Lake, and the country at large, that I've talked a few times about having a representative from the Council of Canadians come on the show to talk not just about specific issues such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but also about a few other things as well, because I think if you've been listening to the guests over the past few weeks, you'll realize that a lot of these issues, whether they be poverty or precarious employment or representation, that all of these things meld together in this place that we live in. And I also would sort of reiterate that even though the election is now done, and we do in fact have change, something that Angela Brown talked about and something that a few other people on the show mentioned as well over the past few weeks, that now we sort of have that question about what kind of change will we have and how do we make sure our voices are still heard in terms of advocating for that change. And so I'm really excited this week on Niagara Voices and Views to welcome Fiona McMurrin, who has been an activist. You were saying earlier you've been involved with different organizations for about a decade, but one of those is the Council of Canadians. So Fiona, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Bart. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
So for people who maybe aren't that familiar, or for people who don't necessarily know that much about the Council of Canadians, tell us a little bit about what they do and what they advocate for.
The Council of Canadians is Canada's oldest citizen action organization. We're over 30 years old. I think it's 32 years now. And we were formed really from a small group of concerned Canadians who were very, very worried in the mid-80s about what the potential implications of a free trade deal with the U.S. might be for Canada and for the hollowing out of Canadian businesses and for the rights of Canadian workers and the environment. So that small group coalesced around people like, at the time, Elizabeth May, Margaret Atwood, Mel Hertig, and also the person who became the national chairperson, Maud Barlow. We officially began in 1985, and since that time, we've been fighting on numerous fronts, but we began with free trade, but then that really expanded to include many of the issues that are actually, as Bart has indicated, more or less covered by or attached to the free trade agenda, which really we see as a corporate rights agenda. So therefore, we've been fighting on behalf of stronger environmental regulations and also to keep our public healthcare system public. So we've been fighting against privatization and particularly public-private partnerships, which are a big part of the privatization agenda. We are probably best known at the moment for our work on water, and our national chairperson, Maud Barlow, is an internationally known water warrior. We are very, very concerned that even though Canada possesses so much fresh water, we are nevertheless polluting our fresh water. We are emptying out our reserves. We are emptying our aquifers, and our groundwater is decreasing. So this has been a big source of concern. We have a small staff in Ottawa, which consists of researchers and campaigners on the various issues that we cover. But we do a lot of our work through our chapters all over the country. And the chapters are groups of volunteer supporters. And our job really is to mediate between the council and the kind of research that it does and gets hold of, and the general public in the parts of the country where we live. So we will take an issue like, for instance, keeping our national Medicare system. And as far as my chapter, which is called the South Niagara chapter, is concerned, we bring that down to the local level. So that's partly why we have fought since our inception in January of 2009 to retain equal access to hospital and healthcare services for the south of Niagara as well as the north.
It's interesting that you mention the council sort of coming together and having its genesis, the first free trade deal back in 1984, because the last person I had on the show, Blaine Haggart, when we were talking a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, he brought that up as well as sort of a starting point in terms of talking about free trade and talking about how it affects this region and how it has affected this region, and talking about it in terms of notions of manufacturing and precarious employment. So it's kind of interesting in that respect that we're having some of those same conversations. And I'll also throw out a line that he used that I think connects back to talking about a kind of corporatization of the agendas of this, is when he commented that it's not so much a trade deal as something else entirely in terms of what it controls. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what, well, this is also very odd because we don't know a great deal about this deal yet. And with the election, things, of course, will change. And there has been talk about how there will be more openness and we'll have more information. Could you tell us a little bit about what the Council of Canadians knows about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and what we should be thinking about when we're looking at this issue and hearing about this issue?
Well, the Council of Canadians, in a way, doesn't know more than you do right now. But what we do have is 30 years of experience at looking at all these trade deals. So let's say where you have the advantage of knowing what to look for. We have worked very, very hard on the CETA deal, the Canada-EU trade agreement, which is now, we're very grateful to say, stalled in Europe, mostly because of the ISDS provision. Now, our trade campaigner, who at the time was Stuart True, who is now editor of the CCPA Monitor, he spent a considerable time in Europe with other European groups who were fighting the trade deal with the Europeans. The investor state protection clause in the CETA is also in the TPP. And essentially, this is a development of Chapter 11 of NAFTA, under which Canada and the other signatories as well, but Canada has been sued. In fact, we're the most sued of the three countries under these provisions. What state resolution process actually does is empower corporations in the partner countries to sue the states, the other states, if they can make the case, they think they can make the case that their profits may be, not necessarily have been, but may be affected by any sort of action that country has or is intending to take. One example would be for environmental regulations that might, for example, make it threaten, say, Dow Chemicals profits. If environmental regulations, even at that municipal sector, were to prevent spraying of lawns in your city.
So that's something that you said was originally in the free trade deal, undoubtedly is in NAFTA, and with the information that is currently available, that we know it's going to be in this as well. And also, as you said, it's one of the things that caused stalling in terms of the Canada-EU deal. Something I want to throw out is that most of the information that we're getting about this deal is coming to us through sources like WikiLeaks. It's coming to us through sources that, and I use this term for my listeners without any kind of pejorative bias, but it's coming to us through unofficial sources. It's coming to us through sources that are, you know, generally, if you think about how WikiLeaks is regarded by many quote-unquote legitimate governments, it's considered something that is problematic to them. But most of the information we're getting is actually from this source. And I was wondering if you could speak about how unique that is or how common that is when we're talking about these kind of agreements.
Obviously, the internet, in a way, is our friend. That's how we would regard it. Because this kind of information, this kind of leak, obviously wasn't available to us when NAFTA was being negotiated. However, there was a lot more openness in the government at that time, and you'll remember that NAFTA was widely discussed, and the text of it was available, and it was widely discussed in Parliament. Things have changed incredibly over the past 30 years. And what has happened is that the new free trade deals, particularly these new multilateral deals, actually do not have to be discussed in Parliament. They really only require the actual government to sign on. So that when we hear about, oh, well, you know, we'll be able to hear more about it in Parliament, well, that very much depends on what the actual government of the time is willing to allow. As you may expect, had the Harper government remained in power, it would have used all the avenues that we saw it use in the last Parliament to close down discussion, to shorten discussion, to really, really shut down the number of people who would even come before committees. In other words, to keep this free trade deal under wraps, as indeed the CETA was kept under wraps. What's scary now is not that we have some information through WikiLeaks. And by the way, that's actual text. That's not just some gossip about it. That's the actual text of the deal. And what we have from WikiLeaks is all the intellectual the intellectual property chapter, which is exceedingly worrying for everybody. Even if you, for example, are not an auto worker or don't work in Canada's dairy sector, everybody out there should be very, very afraid of the intellectual property chapter, because what it's actually doing is clamping down on the freedom of the internet. It's going to clamp down on your freedom to access materials from the internet. It's going to make it very, very much more expensive to obtain music and film. You're going to have to pay for CDs, for example, rather than downloading music, because the copyright for all these author, creator items has been extended. It's been extended now. It has been the life of the author or the creator plus 50 years. Under the TPP, it's the life of that author-creator plus 70 years. You can imagine what that's going to do to you especially because your internet providers will be sending you little warnings if you're downloading information or movies that are not in the public domain. In addition to that, though, if you're a university student out there, think of what that is going to do in terms of the resources that you require. This is going to be a tremendous blow to educational institutions everywhere.
I want to pick up that idea because one of the things that we've talked about with this is, of course, the concerns with manufacturing, especially yes. in this area in terms of how, I don't know if I should say despite what many people were told, or if you did the research, you kind of knew that with free trade that the auto pact would essentially become pointless. And that sort of was something that helped build this place. So you knew that with the end of it, things would change here. But the point you touched upon in terms of the copyright regarding intellectual copyright is in some ways more disturbing because it comes back to that notion of the secrecy and the idea of whose ideas are being put forward in these negotiations. I do, in fact, remember a lot of the media brouhaha around the Canada-US free trade deal and how there was reporting that was happening about specific things that happened, and so it became much more of a public debate. Whereas I think, you know, to quote a past guest, some of the ideas that are in the TPP regarding intellectual property are ideas that were shot down previously when people sort of said, no, this is something that is not favoring a free flow of information, or it's controlling information. I mean, you mention university students. I would say that it's also a question of what can be taught in a classroom, or as is always the case, maybe about what can't be taught or what isn't allowed within those spaces. I'd also say, too, that there's a whole other debate about this in terms of cultural producers who may find themselves in a position where they do not control how their work is disseminated and therefore do also do not control the profits or the benefits of this. And this, again, comes back to the idea of how little we know about it and the structure of negotiations that were set up for this. We could talk about that, I think, for the entire hour. And I think that in the end, we would still find ourselves still needing more information, which kind of leads me to a point, is that the Council of Canadians has a strong history of making their voice heard, making individuals who are maybe not included within these spaces, making them heard. So we have a new government that's promising accountability, that's promising, to use Trudeau's own words, he was not going to make any decisions, but he was going to review the text and be very open about it. How does the average citizen, the person listening to this show who's a Brock student, a Brock professor, or individuals like you and I who sort of are within different communities and groups, how do we make sure we find out what's in the deal? How do we make sure that our voices and concerns are heard about it? How do we make that happen?
I have not been on the internet this morning or listening to the radio. I was taking fitness classes. Just as I was about to leave my class, one of my fellow students said that she understood that Justin Trudeau has spoken to President Obama, who has okayed that we remove, that we stop bombing in northern Iraq and Syria, and has assured him that Canada will sign on to the TPP.
That's what you heard as of, yes. Well, that's what you heard in terms of someone you know.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, then, if Canada is going to sign on, again, I sort of ask, how can we make our concerns known? Is it past that stage?
No, I wouldn't say it's past that stage, because the historic moment right now is like literally a day and a half after Justin Trudeau made this absolutely enormous breakthrough. And I have to confess that I'm sitting here feeling incredibly shocked, because it's starting to occur to me that perhaps the Liberal plan really had a great deal to do with the TPP all along. The fact is that the Liberals were not just concerned with knocking out Conservatives. I'm beginning to wonder whether the Liberals really not only wanted to have a strong majority, which they do, but also wanted to make sure that there was no strong opposing voice to the TPP in the next Canadian Parliament. And he's effectively done that by reducing the NDP to low third-party status.
Two issues as well that were talked about briefly in this election were temporary foreign workers and the notion of pharmacare. How does what we know about the TPP right now reflect upon those issues?
We understand that the TPP is actually going to be very bad for workers, and not only Canadian citizens who are workers, but also workers in the partner countries. Because what this is going to do is drive wages down. It's going to drive, it's going to have our manufacturing moving to those partners who pay the least, such as Vietnam and Malaysia. It's going to probably go a long way towards destroying the auto parts sector in Mexico, which profited from NAFTA. Remember, our jobs, U.S. jobs, moved there. Well, they've actually been able to build up an auto parts sector, which are paying workers fairly decently down there. But, of course, those jobs will now flee to the lower-paying jurisdictions. But probably the most at risk are temporary foreign workers. And even though the Canadian government did bring in a minimum wage standard, this will essentially not apply under the TPP. So it means that temporary foreign workers and corporations and many other businesses are very anxious to see more temporary foreign workers in Canada. Under the TPP, they will be working for lower wages since there won't be any minimum wage standards. And in addition, health and environmental and worker safety regulations won't apply to them. Global Big Pharma, the big pharmaceutical corporations, were one of the sectors that was very much pushing the TPP. And this is because under the intellectual property rights section, it will extend patents on its medications. This is going to delay the release of more affordable generic drugs and probably add $2 billion to our public health care bill. Now, I think this is likely to militate against any kind of universal pharmacare program, which, as you know, was one of the promises being made by parties in this recent election. Of course, Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, has come out very strongly against the TPP on exactly this issue, because preventing cheaper generics from getting onto the market is going to directly affect those countries, those poorer countries, where citizens, patients are absolutely crying out for access to life-saving medication.
I feel, again, this is something in terms of just, even though we don't know a great deal about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that we've barely scratched the surface in terms of talking about its ramifications, and also barely scratched the surface in terms of talking about what it will mean in terms of the changed political landscape. But this is a good point to say to our listeners that they can go and check out the Council of Canadians website. They can get involved with the organization. What's the best way to do that, Fiona?
Probably the easiest way is to go online. We're such an old organization that we have a very easy to remember domain. We're at www.canadians.org. And you can find all the information. Just simply go to our trade sector. I would also urge you to follow the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, which is a left-wing think tank that reports very, very frequently on trade and has been following the TPP very carefully. As for individual Canadians, I always recommend Jim Stanford, who is the economist with Unifor, and very, very knowledgeable, particularly about what this deal is going to mean for Canadian workers. I'd like to recommend that if people are really concerned, one thing you can do is talk to your new Liberal MP. The sooner Liberal MPs in particular hear about this, the better, because after all, they want to prove that they are listening to you. This would be a very, very good time to talk to them about your concerns about the TPP.
And that is a perfect place to wrap up. Fiona McMurrin, who is with the Council of Canadians, thank you for taking the time to come on Niagara Voices and Views and really expanding the discussion and really helping us to sort of think about where we're going with this and what we need to know and what we need to do about it in terms of this new trade deal. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
These are your cultural headlines for the week of October 21st, 2015, as brought to you by Niagara Voices and Views on CFBU, truly diverse radio, broadcasting from Brock University. If you or an organization you're involved with in the Niagara region would like your event mentioned on Niagara Voices and Views, please contact us at talk@cfbu.ca. This Friday, October 23rd at 7 p.m., is the opening reception for Donna Soke's exhibition Satellite. Her artwork will be on display from October 19th to November 28th at the Visa Gallery, Marilyn I. Walker School of Fine and Performing Arts at 15 Artists Common. Literally a satellite show of the exhibition Cloud, it presents digital drawings, single-channel video, and media artworks that speak to the ethereal regions of digital art practice. These digital artworks investigate the invisible, elided, and mysterious. Donna Soke's exhibition Satellite opens this Friday at 7 p.m. and is on display until November 28th at the Visa Gallery, Marilyn Walker School of Fine and Performing Arts. Admission is free and all are welcome. This Sunday, October 25th at 3 p.m. is the opening reception of Bill Burns' exhibition Hans Ulrich Ubrist, Hear Us, and Donna Soke's Cloud at Rodman Hall Art Center. There will also be a talk and performance with the artist Bill Burns at 2 p.m. this Sunday. This exhibition by Bill Burns has been curated by Stuart Reed in collaboration with Jennifer Matotek, the director-curator of the Dunlop Art Gallery in Regina, Saskatchewan, and the exhibition runs from October 25th to January 3rd, 2016. This survey exhibition of recent work by Bill Burns deals with longing, particularly longing for success, for assistance, for recognition, for a different type of world. With tongue planted firmly in cheek, Burns makes overt pleas to art world celebrities, critiquing the politics of power that support them. The artist creates small-scale models of the world's great museums with rooftop signs spelling out his request to curatorial luminaries. The pleas take the form of a litany. Protect us, deliver us, hear us. Burns has met and worked with many of the curators he references through his expansive career in conceptual art in Sao Paulo, Toronto, London, and New York. In another nod to his powerful peers, the artist has created a series of small bobblehead likenesses that directly address notions of commodification within the contemporary art ecology. Rodman Hall is located at 109 St. Paul Crescent. It's open to the public with free admission from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesdays through Friday and from noon to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sundays. Come on out on the evening of Tuesday, October 27th at Gord's Place in downtown St. Catharines for five rounds of team trivia, teams from 1 to 8 people, in support of Garden City Food Co-op, your downtown grocery store opening in 2016. Doors are open at 6:30 p.m. and trivia will begin at 7 p.m. The winning team will take home a fantastic cash prize, but not to worry. There will be lots of other prizes up for grabs throughout the night and the chance to win our 50-50 raffle. Be sure to think up a creative team name in advance as a prize will be offered to the team with the best name. Gord's will also be offering appetizers at half price all night. Tickets for members are $10 and non-member tickets are $12. Please purchase your tickets now to reserve your spot and help us keep things quick at the door. You can purchase tickets at the Garden City Food Co-op website, and please remember to RSVP on the Facebook page or the website. If you're interested in volunteering or donating a prize, contact Jill at GardenCityFoodCoop.ca. Halloween is fast approaching, and Niagara-on-the-Lake ghost walks are happening right now. Experience the stories of Canada's most haunted town, including the angry soldier at the Angel, a violent legend on the shores of the lake, and a house that makes cameras go crazy. Niagara-on-the-Lake ghost walks also include stops outside the courthouse, the Prince of Wales, and Royal George Theatre. Learn about seances, secrets, and legends in the birthplace of Canada and the violent center of the only war on Canadian soil. You can book at the website ghostwalks.com or at the Ghost Walks gift shop at 126 Queen Street, Niagara-on-the-Lake. For more information, you can email info@ghostwalks.com or call 855-844-6787. This is an all-ages event, and tours are taking place most evenings up to and including Halloween. There's still time to be part of the Niagara Pump House bus trip to the McMichael Canadian Art Collection in Kleinburg this Friday, October 23rd. This day trip includes coach bus fare, guided tour, lunch, admission to the McMichael Permanent Collection, the newly landscaped grounds and outdoor sculptures, taxes, and gratuity. It also includes a guided tour of Transforming Spirit, the Cameron Brett Collection of Contemporary Northwest Coast Art. Tickets are $100 or $90 for Pump House members. Call 905-468-5455 or drop by the Pump House to reserve your tickets today. Payment is required to reserve tickets. The bus departs the Pump House at 9 a.m. and returns at 5 p.m. The Niagara Pump House is located at 247 Ricardo Street, Niagara-on-the-Lake, and their email is office@niagarapumphouse.ca. This Saturday, October 24th, is the 12th Annual Pumpkin Fest at Heartland Forest. This will take place at the Heartland Forest Nature Experience at 8215 Caller Road, Niagara Falls, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., rain or shine. Free admission. Come early to get your wristband, as only 500 are available. Ronald McDonald will be there at 1:30 to greet you. Wear your Halloween costume and join us as we offer families a variety of activities. These will include pumpkin carving, hay rides, Tootsie Express train rides, bouncy castle, scavenger hunt, catapult, games, arts and crafts, mini putt, fishing, and nature walks. All events will take place in an accessible setting. For information about this free all-ages event, contact Rita Meyer at 905-356-7384. Brock University's new chancellor, Shirley Chichu, made history this past Saturday when she was installed during an emotional and inspiring ceremony in front of hundreds of graduates. She is Brock's first woman and first Aboriginal person to be chancellor. In her first convocation speech, Chichu talked of racism and the struggles of First Nations people. "I come from a background where when we spoke, our voices were not heard," she said. "Today we still feel marginalized, excluded, and devalued. My hope is that Brock takes a leadership role," she said. "Canadians should know about the first people of this country, and I wear this eagle feather to symbolize the beginning of First Nations history in the classroom." Harriet's Legacies, Race, Historical Memory, and Futures in Canada is a two-day conference that takes place at Pond Inlet, Brock University, during the day and with evening events at Niagara Artists Centre in downtown St. Catharines. This important conference will highlight the historical presence of Black Canadians in Canada. The title refers to the crucial role that St. Catharines played in the Underground Railroad and the abolition of slavery. Harriet Tubman, who is recognized by UNESCO as a freedom seeker, abolitionist, and conductor, was the city's most renowned participant in the Underground Railroad. Tubman and the Black citizens who helped to build St. Catharines are soon to be recognized by the opening of a new elementary school in downtown St. Catharines. The timing of the conference will help to connect the university and the broader community around shared goals of unity and diversity, the recovery and memorialization of Black history in Ontario, and the promotion of general knowledge around the multiple accomplishments of Black Canadians. You can find more information and register for this exciting series of events and presentations at nac.org, nac.org. Events are open to everyone. These have been your cultural headlines for the week of October 21st on Niagara's Voices and Views. If you'd like your organization or an event to be mentioned on Niagara Voices and Views, please contact us at talk@cfbu.ca. We are finally post-election here in Niagara and the rest of the country. And here on Niagara Voices and Views, we're still going to be talking about important issues and ideas that affect the Niagara region, that affect Brock University students, and that, of course, in terms of some of the larger ideas, really matter around the country. And we will be doing some talking here and there about different issues that do connect
back to the election, just because we are in that period where if there's going to be that change that we've talked about on past shows with Professor David Siegel or with Angela Brown or a few other people, now is sort of the time to watch to see how it develops. But we're still going to be talking about important issues here on Niagara Voices and Views on CFBU, a truly diverse radio coming to you from Brock University. And this week we have a guest from Positive Living Niagara, Sarah Birch, who's the Women's Community Development Coordinator, because there's a number of events coming up through Positive Living Niagara. And it's also one of those, I guess I would sort of think of it as a resource also within the community, the same way that when I was talking to Angela Brown and she was talking about some of the things that the National Poverty Initiative does, or when I was talking with a few other individuals such as David Siegel and talking about being informed and engaged with your community, that Positive Living Niagara is an example of that. So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, tell us a little bit about what Positive Living Niagara is and what it is that this organization does.
So, Positive Living Niagara, and some people might know us better under AIDS Niagara. We changed our name about a year ago, so people are still getting used to the new name. So, we provide support throughout the Niagara region around issues around HIV. So we provide support for people affected by HIV. So that could be somebody who is HIV positive, people or groups that are at risk for HIV. We provide prevention programs as well as education programs. And again, the services are free. They're available throughout the Niagara region. So
what are some of the services that Positive Living Niagara provides?
So specifically, some of the services would be one-on-one support as well as group support. We even have a unique program for people, for caregivers. So some loved ones, family members, friends who are caring for people with HIV, they can receive counseling and support around that. The education and community development program, which I'm part of as the Women's Community Development Coordinator, goes out into community, provides education, because as of right now, there, as much as people believe there is a cure, there is still no cure. So the best way to protect yourself is become educated. So, and that's where our educators' roles come in. We'll be out in community at community events. We go into schools. We're often up at Brock, part of events, and we also have different Brock groups that we work with that take part in a lot of our events as well, which is great. We also have our prevention programs, which provides things like condoms, lube, clean needles and works, again, to reduce the rate of new infections of HIV.
That is something I think that undoubtedly a lot of our listeners, and maybe it's an age issue or maybe it's just sort of a notion of history, because I do remember when there was a sort of a more specific focus on living with HIV and preventing HIV in schools back in the 90s. And your point about people thinking that there is now somehow kind of a cure is interesting, because if you do look across the country, and this is something that I think Angela Brown and I touched on, that if you do look across the country, there are large communities where HIV in some ways is a very serious problem, and in some ways is more serious than other diseases that still are talked about more often, or other afflictions that are talked about more often. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you have coming up, because AIDS Awareness Week is coming up for 2015.
December 1st every year is World AIDS Day, and the last week of November leading up to World AIDS Day is AIDS Awareness Week. Again, it's an opportunity to get out into the community and reach different people, because as you said, it's not something that gets talked about anymore. I think when it came out in the early 80s, it was something that was very much in the forefront of everybody's mind, but nowadays I literally have people say, oh, really, is that still an issue? Because we have so many great treatment options. But even that being said, which is all the more reason why people need to be aware of HIV, because there are so many treatment options. Now we're talking about living with HIV, but you still need to be aware and you still need to know what's out there for you, how to protect yourself and how to take care of yourself if you become HIV positive. So AIDS Awareness Week is that opportunity to really reach out to the community so people can educate themselves. And even those who think that they are educated, inevitably they learn something new every time. I learn something new every time because there is so much new information out there and new research that's happening every day or every year.
One of the hot topics in the past few weeks in Ontario has been the sex ed curriculum happening in schools. And when I was watching that, I was thinking, as I kind of alluded to earlier, that when I was in high school, that there was a sort of revamping of it because of the influence of HIV and the influence of AIDS, and making sure that people had the information they needed to be safe and to stay safe. I think also now that a lot of us know someone who's lived with HIV for quite some time, or maybe we know someone and don't know that. So it's also something that, I mean, if you think about it as just living with an autoimmune issue, these are things that anyone should be aware of.
Absolutely. A lot of the misconceptions are still lingering from the early 80s. We try to demystify it. So we have events happening. I mean, we're going to be kicking things off. We're going to be at the Niagara Ice Dogs game just to sort of hand out information. And so you get to cheer on the ice dogs while still learning about HIV. The whole idea is this is a community issue and the community needs to get behind it. We also have, this is the first year, I'm super excited. We actually have a burlesque show happening this year. So just, it's an opportunity, 19 plus event. The idea is it's supposed to be a fun, positive way to talk about sex and healthy sexuality. So that's going to be happening on November 20th at Detour Music Hall. So I'm really looking forward to that event, and hopefully we'll see a lot of people out there as well. And of course, we have our annual flag raising. Every year, the mayor of St. Catharines will come and attend that event. So it's an opportunity to really, again, kick things off, make people aware of that, and announce that this is the beginning of AIDS Awareness Week. And look for Niagara Falls being lit up red as well on the 23rd for AIDS Awareness Week. We have a World AIDS Day reception happening at Rodman Hall on the 29th. We also have, for World AIDS Day this year, we're going to be doing a luncheon and education workshop series that's going to be happening at the St. Catharines Museum. So we're encouraging service providers or healthcare providers or students who are looking to go into those fields. One misconception that I hear a lot from healthcare and service providers is we don't support people with HIV. We don't have those clients. We don't have those patients. Chances are, yes, you do. You just don't know it because they're not telling you about their status. There's still a lot of stigma and discrimination. So this is going to be an opportunity for, like I said, healthcare providers and service providers to build that capacity to support those people. And we also have Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week follows World AIDS Day starting December 1st to the 5th. So this will be the third time we have an Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week event, and it's done in collaboration with the Niagara Regional Native Center, Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. This year we have the Métis Nation will be actually hosting the event in Welland. We also have several different other organizations involved this year, so it should be an exciting community event, which is taking place December 3rd in Welland. You can check out our website. We also have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter. So please absolutely check us out. And the other thing I should mention is you'll probably be seeing a lot of red scarves being hung up around the Niagara region during AIDS Awareness Week and World AIDS Day. And if you're wondering what that's all about, that's part of our Red Scarf campaign. So again, another way of raising awareness and getting people thinking about HIV and what you can do to support people affected by it.
So it seems that one of the main mandates of Positive Living Niagara is not just in terms of informing the community, but also kind of trying to maybe change or sort of make a conversation happen about living with HIV in the Niagara community. So how can people get involved with this? Because there is that whole idea of not just coming in for information, but also in terms of how some of the services you provide are also about supporting individuals with HIV, but also, you know, how to sort of make the community a little more aware and make it something that's more on the agenda when we're talking about different issues. We are past the federal election, so, I mean, normally I would do the line about how do we make this a conversation that is happening with the candidates, but maybe it's also just the idea of how do we make this a conversation that as we're making changes, both on a local sort of community level, but also in a national one, how do we make sure this is something that is still talked about and not sort of relegated as something that, you know, is taken care of? And how do people who are our listeners or people within the community help make that happen?
Again, this is very much a community issue. I think people have the habit of thinking it's something that it's somebody else's family, some other country, some other part of the world, this is happening. This is not something that's happening here. First and foremost, people need to get informed. But they can also inform others. So once you have that information, don't keep it to yourself. Pass it on. Make sure that you're correcting people. I can't tell you how many times I've been at a gathering of people and, you know, the AIDS joke comes out. And it's still happening, and it's inappropriate, and it leads to things like stigma and discrimination. And it's really important. Another important way is if you go to our website, we have our anti-stigma campaign, our Stick It to Stigma campaign. We're asking people to take the Stick It to Stigma pledge, which essentially you're letting people know that you're going to stand up and support people living with HIV, and you're not going to tolerate discrimination, and that you're going to get informed and make sure others are informed as well. And of course, we're always looking for volunteers to help out as well. We have volunteer drivers. We have people who just provide, you know, supports with people living with HIV. We have people who, again, help us out in community, our prevention posse, which is actually when you'll see us at the burlesque show and probably a lot of different other events, our prevention posse handing out the condoms. We're always popular when we have the condoms. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get involved, but visit our website. You can even download the volunteer application from there. And if you're just looking for ways, you're not really sure how you want to get involved, but you do, give us a call or send us a message, and we'd love to chat with you.
And there's one more way that people can also get involved and support Positive Living Niagara that you and I were talking about before, Sarah, and that is,
if there are any knitters out there, we are still looking for red scarves. We have a whole pile of them, but we're looking for a whole pile more. So call out to all knitters out there. We need more red scarves. Again, get in contact with us by calling the office or sending us a message. We'd love to hear from you.
And that's part of the Red Scarf campaign that Positive Living Niagara is doing, approaching AIDS Awareness Week 2015. So we've been talking with Sarah Birch, who's the Women's Community Development Coordinator at Positive Living Niagara, and we hit you with quite a bit of information today, which is very good. It's what we like to do here on Niagara Voices and Views. But remember that everything that Sarah mentioned, you can find out about at their website or at their Facebook page, or you can also just follow them on Twitter, just doing a search for Positive Living Niagara. So Sarah, thank you for making time to come on Niagara Voices and Views this week.
Thank you. It was great.
So you've been listening to Niagara Voices and Views on CFBU 103.7 FM. We're inviting you to not only listen to Niagara Voices and Views, but also get involved and help expand and enrich the conversation about issues in this region. We're looking for researchers, writers, reporters, producers, and hosts to work with CFBU in an environment that will provide experiential learning and help you develop skills to help you find your voice about issues that matter to you and your community. We're always looking for input and opinions. Check us out on Facebook or email us at talk@cfbu.ca. We look forward to hearing from you, and we hope you enjoyed this week's show.